Hey, thanks for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Our team at Lifeway Leadership would like to personally invite you to join us in Nashville this October for Pipeline 2018. This conference will be all about recruiting. Now, here's the thing. If you don't recruit leaders, you have no one to develop. So if you want to learn more about how to recruit leaders more effectively and create a culture of leadership development, then bring your team to Pipeline this fall. To register, just go to myleadershippipeline.com. Once again, that's myleadershippipeline.com. Now enjoy the podcast.
You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Todd Atkins, and today I'm here with Daniel M.
Hello, hello.
As, well, normal lately. Geiger's been kind of MIA. Actually, you guys did too without me recently.
Yeah, we did. So you have been MIA.
That's true.
And we had some fun without you.
I bet you did.
Yeah, we talked about you too.
What?
Well, you have to go back and listen, so.
All right, fair enough. Who are we with today, Daniel?
We are with Aaron Co.
Now, I gave you an air horn there. I don't do that for everybody, Aaron.
That's pretty amazing.
Now, Aaron is a returning guest. He joins the elite club of the second timers.
There's been half a dozen?
Yeah, if even.
Now, we did recently have his boss on lately.
We did.
Mr. Louis Giglio.
Yeah, Mr.
Louis. He's a two-timer.
Is he?
And not to be outdone.
I'm in rare company here. This is
amazing. We've tried to have Shelly on because we know she's like the brains and like the legitness behind everything.
Absolutely. Patrick. That's where the gold is. So you need to get her on for sure.
Good deal. But Aaron has been on before, and I can't remember if you had already made the transition to Passion City, or if you were still at North American Mission Board.
Yeah, I think the last time I was on, I had just transitioned to Passion, and so it was great.
Well, tell us a little bit about what you do at Passion City.
Yeah, so when I transitioned from the North American Mission Board, I stepped out on my own to do consulting work and work with a lot of different organizations. So still stayed with the North American Mission Board, but also started doing some work with Passion. And really, you know, Louis and I have been friends for a long time, and he wanted somebody to step in that could just help him further his vision. And so I handle all his strategic projects. So anything that's, you know, on the horizon for the future, those things usually come into my world, and we figure out if those are things that we're going to do or not. And if we decide to do them, then I'm usually involved up until the first level of implementation. And then I usually hand those things off to somebody that's going to run with it for the long distance.
Nice. So can you give
us the black hand,
the shadow. So can you give us a little bit of some insight into what you've worked on and what you are working on, maybe, if it's not confidential?
I guess the first couple of projects that I worked on, one was we started a seminary here called Passion Global Institute. It's our partnership with Dallas Theological Seminary. And so that was the first project that I worked on, and that is now up and running. We offer 2 master's degrees here through Passion that you ultimately get through Dallas Seminary. So that was an early project. One of the other things I work on is our new locations. So anything that we're doing related to either new locations here in Atlanta or around the world. And so right now we have 1 other location in Atlanta. And then we just opened up in Washington, D.C. At Easter. And so both of those are up and running. They have pastors in place that lead the day-to-day on those. And right now, specifically related to our second location here in Atlanta, I'm helping oversee the construction of a building on that property. So overseeing land acquisition and then ultimately, you know, whatever we're going to build out there. So hopefully break ground here in the next couple of months on that.
That's awesome. Now, in bringing guests back on the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, if you're just tuning into the podcast and maybe haven't realized when someone comes on the second time or the first time, we do have a second set of questions that we ask. So let's kick it off here, Aaron, with the first one. What is a conflict or failure that has benefited you in leadership? Conflict or failure?
Yeah, I think, listen, anytime you face conflict, it's designed to sharpen you and to help you become a better leader. And so I would say, interestingly enough, one of the early projects we worked on here at Passion was some worship nights that we were doing down in Miami. Interestingly enough, the very first night that we were going to do down there, we had over 800 people RSVP, which is about what we were thinking the attendance was going to be. But then that night, when it came time for that first worship night, we had 150 people show up at the at the night, which, you know, in our world, that was pretty interesting. But, you know, we were going down there really just praying and believing, trying to, you know, see what God might have for us as far as, you know, eventually planting a church. And, you know, what we realized very quickly is that Miami is just a different culture. And just because you put yourself out there, just because you might have some notoriety in some other places, you've really got to get in there and do the hard work. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we were able to regroup, refocus our efforts. And I think the next worship night that we had down there a month later, you know, we were up to like 600 or 700, and then, you know, we grew from there. And ultimately, you know, Miami is on our radar as a place where we may plant a church someday. And the only thing holding us back right now is, you know, who the leader is going to be to lead out in that. But
don't, you know,
that
Eric.
Effort really, yeah. Well, Geiger and I've talked about it a little bit. So, he's been really helpful. He actually was one of my first phone calls after the epic failure. I was like, man, what's going on down here? But yeah, you just learn through that. And it just shows you whether you are associated with something like Passion that has a global reach, or you're a brand new church planter just getting started. You know, you're really not immune to the hard work of having to get out there and just connect with people right where they are. So that failure helped us understand that pretty quickly.
Yeah, give us a little insight into what you did differently the second time around.
Well, we just, you know, we tried to have what I call an air game the first time around. You know, we just got the word out through normal social media channels, okay, et cetera, the first time. And again, people responded, but they didn't show up. And so we had to go back and just hit the ground running. So, I mean, I immediately got on an airplane and spent a lot of time down in Miami just connecting with people. And then as I connected with people, then they connected with people. And so we just had to build our grassroots connection base down there and not rely on just the brand, if you will, of Passion, but we actually had to connect with people.
So how did that inform the way that you went into DC? I mean, most of the listeners know that I came to Lifeway or to Nashville from DC. And so DC is also a very different culture. So how did that experience in Miami shift how you all went in with Ben in DC?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, Ben and his family moved to DC in August, and we did not have a worship night or any sort of public, big scale gathering for about 6 months. And so the first 6 months were really all behind the scenes, connecting with people, really trying to build a grassroots coalition. And really what we did first in DC was we started with a community group. We started with a smallish gathering of people, and those people really became our people. That was really the goal, is we want to build some kind of environment where we can, you know, really figure out who wants to help build a church with us. And we found that, you know, doing that through the community group route was a much better route than just the kind of the big worship night route.
That's good. That's good.
Very cool. Very cool.
Well, we want to get to our second question now. And, you know, when we look at where you are and what you're doing, we want to know who or what has been the greatest leadership influence in your life.
I don't know how much you all know, but I spent 9 years of my life in New York City as a church planter and really fell in love with global cities and did a lot of my seminary work at the master's and doctoral level just around the global cities. And I would say there's probably no bigger influence in my life than Tim Keller, just on the way I think about the city and just how I lead. I think his work on helping us understand what a biblical theology looks like in the context of the city is one of the more robust ones. And so for me, I do all I can not to put him up on too big of a pedestal, but I would say he's probably the most influential thinker as it relates to leadership and how I, just shape my thinking about the city and really how we do ministry here at Passion. I mean, not everybody on our team is a big Tim Keller guy, but, of course I bring that to the table. And so it's helping shape, how we think about Atlanta, how we think about DC, how we think about a lot of other places and things that we might do ministry in the future.
Yeah. So then does that mean, because on the one hand, your first location, I guess, outside of Atlanta was a major city, DC and right. Washington. And then you're looking at Miami and you have that city influence. And you also said that you are in charge of kind of those new locations as well. Are you guys intentional at planting other Passion City churches in the city? And is that partly due to the Keller influence as well? Or what does that look like for you guys?
Yeah, when Passion City Church first started meeting here in Atlanta, they met in the basement of one of our board members. And I think there were, maybe a couple handfuls of people that were in those early meetings. And when those guys were together and they were on their knees praying, just envisioning what God was going to birth in them, the idea of Passion City Church really came to life. I mean, initially it was Passion Church. And what we found is that somebody else already owned that domain name and they didn't want to sell it to us. They had been influenced by Passion. And so they named their church Passion Church. That's awesome. And they didn't want to give it up.
Hey, they're Lifeway churches.
Yeah,
there are a ton of Lifeway churches.
Oh, totally. Oh, yeah.
And those guys could make a lot of money if we decided to buy back our domain names. But it was great because it really forced us into, or those guys that were around in the early days, it really forced them just to clarify their vision. And one of the guys in those meetings just said, we're Passion City Church. And from right then and there, what Louis, our pastor, would call the hinge cities of the world or the global cities of the world really came into focus. And mm-hmm. So, we don't have a 5-year plan. I couldn't tell you what's next after DC, quite honestly, but we just know that we want to be involved in these, culture shaping, influence shaping cities of the world. And for us, it's really just a matter of the right leaders at the right time. And, we're developing a pipeline here of leaders. And I know this is a leadership podcast. And so for us, we know that the work that we're supposed to be doing right now is just developing leaders. And then as those leaders are ready to be sent out, then, where they go, that'll all be revealed in due time. But definitely, the hinge cities of the world are on our radar and we're just praying, when and where next.
Yeah. That's awesome. Now, aside from Passion, because you were planting up in New York City before that, did a lot of work with the North American Mission Board, actually helped them formulate their send strategy, right? I believe you kind
That's
of,
right.
I mean, send New York. I mean, it's kind of what you were doing up there. And now you're working with Passion very much on that strategic side. For you, Aaron, if you think long-term, what would you love or want your leadership legacy to be?
Well, I think more than anything, I really, want my leadership legacy to be that I spent my life helping to build Jesus's church. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, when God called me to ministry, it was a pretty broad calling. He didn't call me to necessarily be a pastor or necessarily to be a missionary, but he just said, listen, help build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And so for me, whether I'm a lead pastor or whether I'm a missionary, or whether I'm a strategist, it really doesn't matter to me what role I'm playing in the kingdom. I just want that to be my overall legacy. Now, if you bring that down a notch, I really want to help the evangelical church in America think about the urban age. Because in 2007, we crossed over into the urban age. And so we all are city people now, if you're a global citizen. And as I think about the church in America in particular, you know, we're really not urban minded. We tend to be suburban minded or rural minded when you look at the church. When you look at the predominance of our churches, they tend to be in rural or suburban areas. And so really what I'm most passionate about is helping churches think about being for the city. Mm. And that doesn't mean that every church needs to be in the city. It doesn't necessarily mean that every church needs to go plant a church in the city. But what it does mean is that every church needs to at least be for the city and not anti the city, because that is our reality. And that's where the vast majority of people live. And so I'm really trying to do all I can to shape that narrative and to help people understand what it looks like to live in the context of the city.
That's awesome. So what habits or practices do you focus on that allows you to continue to learn as a leader?
Listen, I'm a big reader. I read all the time, and I'm always, you know, just trying to stretch my thinking on things. You know, one of the things I've really gotten into lately, and this is just sort of a derivative of my doctoral work, is just this idea of placemaking. Mm. And one of my favorite books I just read was is a biography actually on Frederick Law Olmsted, which I don't know if you know who that is, but he's the guy who created Central Park, and then went on to create parks all over America, and really had influence on, you know, how we create place, you know, all over the world. So he was alive in sort of the early to late 1800s, and really has put his stamp a lot on, you know, just how we think about place. And so for me, it's always diving into guys like that, kind of learning what they were thinking about, and you know, just learning from their lives. And so I've really gotten into a lot of biographies lately, and Olmsted's is one of the ones I've just recently dove into.
Yeah, what are some other biographies that you'd recommend you've recently read?
You know, one of the things that's interesting, considering our political climate right now, I just finished a couple biographies on Lyndon Johnson, who was our president after Kennedy, and then I read one on Richard Nixon. And so you kind of got both sides of the political spectrum, Republican, one Democrat, but they're both really, really interesting characters. And they both really had this sort of the same sort of moral outlook on life. And my big lessons reading those biographies is we're going to be okay. So if you're in a position where you think we're not going to be okay, listen, we have survived much worse in the past. And I don't know if I'm stepping on the third rail here.
I'm really not
trying to give too much away, but you know, it's, you know, it was really, really interesting to read both of those and, you know, learn a lot from them. Because, I mean, in America, we've been, you know, through peaks and valleys before, politically speaking. And, you know, that's one of the great things about our system is that, you know, one party can be in power, and then 8 years later, usually the next party gets in power. And usually we as the American people together end up getting it right. And that's one of the things that I learned from reading both about Johnson and Nixon.
Very cool. Anything outside of biographies reading lately?
Oh, man. This one could get me in trouble, too. I just finished.
Let's do it.
I actually reread. Let me tell you, this one's not the one that I think would get me in trouble, but I just read Elon Musk. That's a biography. I just read about him. But I mean, that guy is just absolutely incredible, what he's doing.
Yeah.
But I just read Surprised by Hope by N.T. Wright, which is a great book. And really just – it's really amazing. If you grew up in a certain camp thinking a certain way about heaven and that heaven is going to be – you know, we sit on clouds and we play harps the rest of our life, then N.T. Wright really does a great job helping us understand what the new heavens and the new earth are actually going to be and what those look like. And it's – you know, as the name implies, I mean, it's a super hopeful book. So that one's a great one as well if you haven't read it.
No, I don't think any of those would have gotten you in trouble. I'm curious to know.
N.T. Wright? No, I think enough people are, there's enough people that, people have different opinions, but mm-hmm. most guys would say he's legit and they've learned from him regardless of their leanings for
completely,
sure.
Completely.
Any books for you, Daniel?
Yeah, man, what am I working through right now? A couple that have been recommended from podcast guests.
I know. It's horrible because we get all these great books. I mean, everybody, like, I want to read Elon Musk.
Yeah.
I've now that you mentioned it.
Is it an Audible or is it a read? Elon's.
I think you could do it Audible. Yeah. It's pretty great, though. I mean, you know, listen, if you think you're busy, read that because that guy is doing a lot of stuff, you know, and it's pretty amazing to just think about his capacity for leadership.
That's awesome. So I actually just started reading The End of Jobs by Taylor Pearson. So that's a little bit of research for the next book that I'm writing right now. And another one is Seth Godin's The Dip. So I've come across, I mean, I'm familiar with the concept, but he wrote a book on it. And man, Seth Godin, kind of like Tim Keller, I try to read everything I can from certain particular people who are kind of next level thinkers. So Seth Godin is one of those guys.
So I've got a book called When, and it's all about perfect timing, Daniel Pink. So anything he writes, I like most of the time. And then, The Culture Code is not one that I want to read, but I feel like I have to read. it's the secret of, highly successful groups. And he talks in particular, one of his 3 points is on purpose. And I'm kind of obsessed with purpose right now. You know, everybody always hears the quote, culture eats strategy for breakfast. Nobody really knows to attribute that to. It's Porter, but you can't find anywhere where he actually said it. There is a gentleman, however, who said culture eats strategy for breakfast, but it gets its appetite from purpose. And I love that quote. Love that quote. Because, you know.
Are you feeling directionless, Todd? Is that why you need
No, I just feel like as I talk about culture a lot, and, you know, but naysayers, my theologian brothers, would push that aside as being too secular or whatever. And I'm like, no, it's very sacred. When you think of purpose, what is the mission that we have? What is the purpose of the local church? So let's break that down and take a look at it. So it's coming at it from a different angle.
Absolutely.
And I want to pull that out desperately. So.
That's awesome.
Good deal. Move us on.
Yeah, let's go on to the last question. And this is a little bit of a derivative from what you would have said to your 20-year-old self. A little bit different. Here it is. What is the best piece of leadership advice you have ever been given?
Man, it's a great question. I think the best advice I've ever been given is just, you know, something along the lines of to not fear. You know, I think a lot of times we have this fear of man and it holds us back from our potential. And, you know, I remember in my early days, you know, working with a pastor, one of the first pastors I worked with on a church staff, and he just really helped me understand that, you know, listen, you have nothing to fear. And so if it's about stepping out in faith and doing something that might seem crazy, or if it's about trying to get around leaders who you feel like are out of your league, or, you know, whatever the case may be, if it's about, you know, learning, you know, a new skill or getting a degree or whatever the case may be, you know, there's nothing to fear. And I've, you know, I still always struggle with that, though. I think as I'm now 41 years old, I've really, you know, come to grips with the fact that the reality is if you take anything just day by day and set your mind to it, there's pretty much not anything you can't accomplish. I mean, I know there are things maybe you can't accomplish, but listen, you know, there's a lot that you can. You know, one of the things that just to kind of illustrate that in my own life, listen, I was a C student at best in high school. And when I went to college, it really didn't get a whole lot better. So, you know, I made it through college. But when I got out of college and started, you know, toward my master's degree in seminary and then really started to get interested in cities, you know, one of the things I knew is that if I wanted to influence people, especially if I wanted to teach at the graduate level, you're probably going to have a PhD. Well, if you had told my 18-year-old self in high school that would ever be on the radar. I mean, man, if you told my high school English teacher that would ever be on the radar, I mean, it would have been like, no way. But for me, as I got older and really just realized that that's something I wanted to do, I mean, I just had to develop the skills to go do that. And it was daunting. I mean, it was a lot of hard work, but I figured it out. And, you know, I kind of come to think of myself, and there are others, a lot of others like me that are just blue collar academics. You know, we're not naturally academic. We're not, you know, naturally school type people, but you can do it if you put your mind to it. And so for me, that was one of the lessons I learned, is this: I'm not going to let the fear of what I think I can't do hold me back. And, you know, given enough time and enough, you know, forward progress every day, you can go and do a lot of different things.
That's awesome. So what do you, in light of that advice then, is there anything specific that you're continuing to learn in, continuing to grow in, aside from obviously the ongoing development of biographies and what the way that you're learning through work?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I'm really fascinated by right now, and there's a group of us working on this, is, you know, what does it look like to take a church building, usually probably in an urban area, and redevelop it into a mixed use facility, but you still keep a place for the church to meet there. But yet, you know, you figure out a highest and best use for that property. I mean, as you all well know, I mean, there's billions of dollars of church real estate and that's, you know, up for sale right now. Or, you know, there are churches that are just going under, and those church buildings are either becoming nightclubs or, you know, other types of venues. And a lot of them are becoming condos. And we're trying to figure out, you know, how do we actually take that and keep it a church, but yet find a way to allow other things to exist there as well. And so there's you know, some developer friends of mine and myself and a few others, we're trying to figure that out. So that's a whole new area for me, but it obviously ties into my passion, you know, to see the church flourish in the context of the city, which a piece of that is we're going to have to figure out new and creative and unique ways for the church to gather, because real estate prices are super expensive. So that'd be one area where I'm stretching myself right now.
That's fascinating.
Very good.
Yeah. I have a friend, his name is Graham Singh. He leads the Church Planting Canada. He kind of oversees Church Planting Canada, and he's doing his doctorate right now on the whole idea of redeeming kind of sacred spaces, yeah, and planting churches, evangelistically oriented churches in, mm-hmm, in city center sacred spaces. So,
well,
yeah, there's a lot of work around that.
So too, just so you know, Aaron, in Clarendon, they're, you know, just across the Potomac from DC, yeah, you have First Baptist Clarendon, who had a block of real estate. They ended up dozing the whole thing. But what they did, it was a mixed use building, and it was different income levels. It was basically they worked with the city to provide housing for different types of people, socioeconomic up and down. So some of the housing was available for you to buy, and, you know, was in a great location. You could throw a rock and hit the metro station. And some of it was, you know, intended for low income families and all different kinds. But the big piece is they kept a floor of this now high rise that was meant specifically for the church.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, I think that's really the idea, because even if you have a thriving church in a major urban area, I mean, the cost of real estate is almost, you know, not approachable. You know, it's just really hard to get into. And so I think just rethinking how we use the space is going to be really, really important. And really, probably gone are the days where you can afford to just have a building and use it a day and a half a week, and then it sits empty the other 5 or 6 days. And so you really got to think through, you know, who's coming and going. And honestly, I think what we're going to learn in the process is that actually that's probably the healthiest model and has been all along. You know, we've just lived in an era where you can, you know, separate out the uses for property, and you can have your, you know, your entertainment district over here and your business district over here and your residential over here. And I think what we're going to find is actually it's probably healthier if all those things were mixed anyway. And I think the church is going to benefit from being right in the heart of, you know, the places where people want to be.
That's great. Well, thanks, Aaron, for being on the podcast with us again. What's the best way for people to connect with you, to learn more about what you're doing?
Yeah, you can just visit PassionCityChurch.com to keep up with what we're doing at Passion. And by default, you can keep up with me that way. You can also reach me on Instagram at Aaron B. Co. is my handle there. And you can keep up with what I'm doing that way as well.
Fantastic. Well, thanks, Aaron.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Don't forget to sign you and your team up for Pipeline 2018 at myleadershippipeline.com and join us in Nashville this October.